This is episode 185, recorded November 11th, 2013.
Greetings, Aquariumaxers.
We're working with one mic again.
That's okay.
So, but we're working on fixing that because...
We're very close. Our donations have come up to about 182, I think, is where we are on last count, which is great, meaning field recorder is right on the horizon. I've been pricing them, and some of them are right in that range, although we'll probably need to get a power supply for it, too, so we can plug it into the wall, because running our mics off of batteries from that thing will not work for very long. But that's great. That
means we're very close.
And in fact, thank you to Sean in North Carolina for the most recent donation.
Yeah. It was very cool.
Thank you very, very much.
Exciting. And in fact, he also has a contribution for today.
He does. But maybe we should list everybody first.
Oh, okay. Well, we've got Sean in Asheville. Oh, I kind of have a friend in Asheville.
Do you?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Okay.
He probably doesn't know her, though, because Asheville's kind of little. I mean, big.
Big?
Okay. Long day. Okay. And then Chris in Milwaukee in Wisconsin. Matt in Perth, Australia. Making the Carnforth, UK. Carnforth, the UK. I guess I don't even have to say the. That's okay. And Tom Provo and Anthony in Oregon.
Okay. Sounds like a good lineup.
So we'll go to Sean first. And he's responding to my silly question from last week about, have you guys ever had weird fish dreams?
Yeah.
Because I had that dream about the gigantic, like soccer ball sized black moor who was floating in the air and acting like a dog and like getting petted and stuff. Okay. So Sean says, oh yeah, I've definitely had similar dreams. Not lately, though. I used to have a recurring dream where I was essentially swimming around the house like a fish, not needing air. I'd see my fish swimming around. For some reason, tetras would always hide under the kickboards in the kitchen.
I thought that was hilarious when I read that. I don't know.
Do tetras like to hide?
Well, some are more retiring than others. A lot of them are not particularly shy, but just the fact that they're hiding under the kickboards is really funny.
It is funny. He says, listen to your show while dropping kids off at school today. Thanks for having the fortitude to keep it up on such a regular basis. On gravel vacs, I pretty much have all densely planted tanks with sand as a substrate, and I don't gravel vac. This is going back to talking about...
Right, and you asked, why would somebody not gravel vac? And I said, well, this tank right here, I don't really gravel vac because it's planted.
Planted tanks.
Yeah.
Because I looked across the room and saw the planted tank and went, oh... Sometimes Kelly should think before she talks, but sometimes she doesn't. But that's okay, because then you guys get a good laugh. He says, also, for what it's worth, I do large water changes, about 50%, in my 75-gallon by adding prime, enough for the whole tank, and just adding tap water straight from the hose, apparently without issue. I need to do some reading on the outgassing issue. I guess this could be a problem with the difference in the partial pressure of gases between the water and the blood of the fish.
Yeah, see, and I've done large water changes up to 90 without any apparent issues. But yeah, that seems to be what it is, that basically the gas is the gases that are under pressure that come from the tap water start depressurizing, but before they do, some of them diffuse into the bloodstream of the fish, and then they start depressurizing inside the fish. So it's like the bends,
approximately. They have little bubbles in their blood?
They get bubbles in their bloodstream. That's going to be bad for them, yeah.
That sounds uncomfortable.
In a similar way that the bends are bad for people. You know.
What does it do, anyway,
well,
the bends?
Well, it can actually be dangerous, I guess, because it can cut off blood supply to various
parts. The bubble
parts.
Is blocking stuff?
Yeah. Oh. I think that's my understanding of how it works anyway. And I guess the same thing can happen to fish.
Okay. So, thank you, Sean, for your contribution and your contribution.
Yes.
Okay, Chris in Milwaukee. He says, good day from the Midwest. My newest tank setup is a 75-gallon with fluorite capped with play sand for planted tank delight. That's like Turkish delight, except it's an aquarium and you don't eat it.
Right, and it's not from Turkey.
Yeah, but it's delightful.
Right.
I have zero fish in it, but I'm thinking of moving a male with two female turquoise rainbows from a 40-gallon breeder. I will most likely add a dozen corys later on, but the question is regarding the likelihood of rainbow breeding in the 75. Given the smaller size, MIO, and I'm afraid I don't know what
IMO.
IMO.
In my opinion.
Oh, see, I know what LOL means. That's about it.
I think you know some other ones, too.
Yeah, a few that all kind of pertain to LOL, that all pertain to laughing.
Okay.
Well, excuse me.
I think that, I wish I could tell you more about this, because I don't really know about this species of rainbow. It's a very beautiful species. It's very blue.
Mm-hmm. Did he send a picture?
Well, yeah. One of the most striking, well, he didn't. No, I'm sorry.
You
didn't.
Found
I put
picture.
A picture there so I could show it to you, and then I forgot to show it to you. But
so you can show it to everybody else.
Yeah,
let's put it up.
Okay, we can put it up. But they're very, very pretty fish. They're much larger than the dwarf neon rainbows we had spawning in our 55.
Mm-hmm.
Much bigger. Like, they can get about 4 inches long or so.
Wow.
Quite a bit bigger. So I'm not sure whether that would
work. So is he thinking that a 75 will not be big enough for them because they're so much bigger?
Well, I'm wondering, just because I don't know that much about that species. But I would say it would be worth a try. I mean, if they're at all happy in there, I'm sure they would try.
Because if he's only got 3 4-inch fish in a 75-gallon aquarium, that doesn't seem like it would be a lack of space.
Well, rainbow fish are pretty active and they like a lot of space, but it seems to me that it could work. I mean, you can spawn rainbow fish in fairly small aquaria, even if it's not ideal for them long term, they can still spawn in it sometimes. So I don't know if he's thinking size too big, size too small exactly, but our 3 neon rainbows spawned in the 55 without any problem. So
because he says given the smaller size of what though, because they're going into a bigger tank.
They are going into a bigger tank, so I'm not sure. But I think it would be worth a try. That would be mine.
Yeah.
And, thank you, and let us know how it goes. Mm-hmm. If you try it, I would like to hear how it goes.
Okay, we have Matt.
And I think, I'm just saying, I think that Chris is a new contributor.
Oh, is that his first?
Yeah, I think so. So welcome.
Well, welcome, Chris. Alrighty, now we're going to go to Australia and talk to Matt.
Matt in Perth, Western Australia, yes.
Yes, Perth in Western Australia, which is in the southern hemisphere of the planet Earth.
Okay, I just, it's kind of nice to say where they're from.
I'm just teasing you. Okay, and Matt says, so our power bill has doubled since last year. We have decided to go through the house and reduce energy use to reduce our bill. Currently, my 6-foot tank has 2 Eheim 2217 canister filters, a double 6-foot light with 4 3-foot fluorescent tubes in it, 2 150-watt heaters, and an air pump. I was investigating aquarium LED lighting. There does not seem to be a freshwater version. I know that some LED lights are contained in fluorescent tube containers. I attached an image of that from the internet. It's hard to explain. However, and he did send the picture so we can see what it is.
Mm-hmm.
However, in Perth, and he even says Perth, Western Australia, we do not have 3-foot LED fluorescent tubes. I cannot order it online either, as each country has different standards, and using the wrong one can cause your television and radio to stop functioning while the light is on. I think that having a single heater and a single canister filter will be more energy efficient than the current setup. The previous owner only ran the air pumps some of the time. So my questions are, what can I do to make my lighting less energy intensive? 2, should I replace the dual heater canister situation with single setups? And 3, is there an optimum amount of time to have the air pump on? I suspect that the air pump is not using much power at all, but it is worth investigating.
Okay. Well, first of all, in terms of what can I do to make my lighting less energy intensive, I think looking at LED lighting would be, you know, that is going on the right track. Of course, if there's nothing available in your area, that makes it tough. If you can look into see if Marineland offers products in your area or products that are designed to function in your area, that would be worth looking into, because I know that Marineland does produce freshwater LED lighting solutions of various types. They produce lighting specifically for planted aquaria, and then they produce lighting of varying brightnesses for just display aquaria. So, depending on your situation there, I can't quite recall if your tank is planted or not. I should recall that. I've seen pictures of it. But if it's a planted tank, you'd want to look into the, of course, the plant-ready lighting, but they have various fixtures. So if that's all, you know, that may be a solution if they provide the type that is wired for your sort of current. And the next question, about replacing the dual heater and canister situation with single devices, I honestly have no idea whether that would be more energy efficient or not. None. I wish I did.
No, what's a dual?
He's just saying two of them on there? He has two filters and he has two heaters.
How much energy do they take to run?
Well, that's the thing.
I mean, obviously you're running twice as much as you would with a single, but if it doesn't take very much.
Well, he has two 150 watt heaters. So he's wondering if he got one 300 watt heater, if that would be more energy efficient.
Oh, not like just that. Go down to just one 150
right.
watt heater.
Right. And that's okay. That's what he's thinking. And I really don't have any idea. I wish I did. If you have, were there any electricians out there who could shed some light on the subject there, that would be nice. I don't know. And then in terms of the air pump, with those two canister filters running, the air pump is sort of, well, it could serve a couple of purposes, but one would be aesthetic, and the other one would be to break up the surface tension a little bit and help prevent scum from forming. Mm-hmm. Those would be about the only things it's going to be vital for, so... I would say you can choose to run it for shorter periods of time. You could put it on a timer to come on for a couple hours a day or, you know, whatever. It probably is not that critical. And I'm not sure how much juice it's pulling. So I wonder if they have kilowatts available in your area. They're devices for measuring current that something pulls.
Oh.
And you could, they don't cost that much. So you might want to look into that. It's worth a shot.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, and just see what everything pulls.
I don't know if he can talk to the filter companies.
Mm-hmm.
Or if there's information about the product online that says this is approximately how much energy it uses, if he could compare the two singles versus the one bigger
right.
one.
Right, that might be useful too. But in terms of the air pump, I mean, you could probably dispense with it completely as long as you're running those two canister filters all the time. They're going to... give some
really
circulation to the water. It also depends what your outflow is. If you're using spray bars above the water, spray bars below the water, and so on, how much aeration you're getting. But usually air pumps are just kind of for fun unless they're actually running, you know, a sponge filter or something like that. They do contribute, of course, to aeration and water flow somewhat, but not as much as the filters do. Okay. Yeah, that's... I wish I could tell you more. That's about where I am.
Okay.
On that one.
Well, if there is anybody who knows about
the current
electrical side.
Yeah, that would be nice to know.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty, so now we have Mick. But before we get to Mick, let's take our break. Alrighty, so we are back from our wee little break, and we will continue with the adventures of Mick.
Yes.
So, Mick says, Russ, your dedication to us out here in Aquarimax land is completely above and beyond the call of duty. Still broadcasting despite the ravages of pneumonia, astounding. Made possible, I am sure, only by the ministrations of Kelly. I see you have edited out the cries of another warm towel, nurse.
Well, I don't think I ever used those exact words, but Kelly was definitely, how can I say? She was very, very instrumental in getting me back on my feet.
Which we are glad you are on.
Yes. So, thank you again.
And Mick says, on a more fishy note, I thought you might like this picture of a dwarf dragon goby. I brought some in for the shop recently, and they are a great little addition to a cool water tank. The males have terrific display behaviors, opening their mouths wide and jostling around. Fabulous colors, too.
On the subject of cool surface scum. Yeah, the picture was cool. We were going to put the picture up.
Yeah, we'll put that on the page so everybody can check it out.
Excuse me. On the subject of surface scum, I have noticed that when I feed more fat-rich foods, such as Tubifex or glassworms, that I can get this, the scum. It usually disappears with a few extra water changes or using a polyfilter, which is the brand name, and which he also sent a picture of, so we know what he's talking about, which is fantastic at properly absorbing organics and other undesirables from the water. I now use it as a standard in my water conditioning tub, and I used it with good results in my nanomarine tank in place of a skimmer. So I suggest if someone sees this, don't panic. In quotation marks. 99.9% of the time, it is completely harmless. As long as you know where your polyfilter towel is, you will be a hoopy frood.
Well, and that's good to know. It's good. I need to try to get rid of that. In certain situations, like Hiro's tank, our African clawed frog, he often, you know, he has a scum there, even with big water changes, because he's a dirty little guy. He's
a dirty, rotten frog.
He makes a mess. He's not rotten, but he just makes messes.
You know, dirty, rotten.
Yeah.
It was a joke.
Yes.
Sorry, Hiro.
He makes messes, though. So that could be helpful there. I don't look into that polyfilter stuff.
Okay. So thank you, Mick. And then we've got Tom and Provo. So Tom says, sorry about Pie Show. Thank you. We were sad about it, too.
Yes, we were.
He says, you mentioned him earlier, but were sort of coy about the name. Perhaps it would be a fitting tribute to now reveal the name's origin.
I think it was what you said, something like, I'm not going to tell you what the name is, but if you know, then you need to write us in or something.
Oh, did I say that?
I think that's what you said, yes.
I kind of say that sometimes, don't I?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's what you said.
So Pie Show was named after, there's a Nickelodeon cartoon show called Avatar, The Last Airbender. They actually made a live action movie about it, which didn't nearly do justice to it. But the cartoon show we watched with our kids, and it's really
fun. It was on Netflix or something, right?
Yeah, we watched it on Netflix. But it's a Nickelodeon show, I think. And the show's
takes place in a pseudo-Asian sort of alternate universe,
yeah,
or something.
Where people have these bending powers where you're a waterbender and you can make control water, or you're a firebender and you can control fire.
But it looks kind of like it's happening in some Asian country, but not quite Japan and not quite China, not quite Korea.
It's kind of a fantasy.
Yeah, almost Asia.
Yeah, almost Asia. There we go. But Pie Show was a game played. You said it was kind of mahjong.
Mahjong kind of game. Yeah.
And it was played by sort of the Yoda figure of the show, and it was
his favorite game. He was always playing it, and so the kids wanted to name him that, or did you want to name him that?
I wanted to name him that because I kind of wanted to name him after the character, but he didn't really look like an Uncle Iroh to me, but Pie Show was what fit because Uncle Iroh liked to play that game a lot.
Okay,
so
well, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Tom says, I have made frustratingly little progress in setting up my CO2 system. Inexperience caught me in what Robert Pirsig in Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, which is a fabulous book title that sounds really cool, calls a gumption trap, which I think is also a very fun phrase. You can kind of guess what that's about.
It's basically that you are excited about something and you try to do it, but
bite
then
off more than you can
something
do.
That happens, frustrates you, and you get sort of trapped in this cycle of not being able to do it because of your frustration.
Mm. Luckily, I have rebounded, and I'm reasonably confident that I can stabilize the system when my upgraded needle valve arrives.
Good.
Meanwhile, the fish have heroically endured some swings in pH, but despite that, I now have a half a dozen molly fry about 3/8 of an inch. So that's cool. Each of the fry has a different color pattern with variations of black, white, orange, and gold. It should be interesting to see how they progress. Now, a question. It appears to me that color-enhancing fish food has limited effect. I have never seen change in tetras or rasboras when introducing color-enhancing food, nor have I noticed change in the color of my pet shop's swordtails, except for the appearance of color along the rays of the dorsal fins, which might have been going to happen anyway. Perhaps my color-enhancing food was poor quality. If I am feeding a good quality fish food whose first ingredients include spirulina, krill, and shrimp, and supplement that occasionally with frozen brine shrimp or frozen bloodworms, is there much to be gained with separate color enhancers? I think not, but it would be sad if my fish weren't invited to the prom because I was negligent.
Well, I think...
I know. You don't want your teenage fish to come up to you and say, you're ruining my life!
You don't want any of your fish to say that. Well, it's good to know that the you've got over the gumption trap and that hopefully the CO2 system will be set up soon. Let us know how that goes. And that you've got a whole bunch of mollies that, I guess, what would you call them? Heinz 57 mollies? Molly mutts? I don't know. And, you know, a lot of people frown on mixing varieties of fish. You know, they're not different species necessarily in this case. I mean, the pet store mollies are probably descended from more than one species. Libers are often that way. Swordtails have platy blood in them, or platy blood, depending on how you pronounce it, and vice versa. You know, there's a lot of mixing going on. So a lot of the mainstream live bears are a little mixed anyway, so it doesn't really matter that much. Plus, as long as you're not selling them as one particular breed, you know, it's probably fine. You're keeping them in your own tank, and so it's fine. And it's kind of fun. I've done that with platies before. I had some in a paludarium that would just, you got all sorts of weird things coming out, because I had several different varieties, and it was fun. I liked it, and I didn't distribute them, you know, saying these are whatever this variety. So kind, yeah. It was cool. I think in terms of the food, you hit the nail on the head, basically, when you said I'm already feeding things like spirulina and krill. Excuse me. Those things have color enhancers in them.
Right, food,
right. So spirulina is full of color enhancers, and krill has color enhancers in it, and so does shrimp. And so the thing is, you're probably giving them color enhancers that are just as effective as the ones in the color-enhancing food, so it doesn't really matter. And I think hit the nail on the head there. And it is possible that if you were to get some even more intense color enhancers, you might get more effect, but probably getting a pretty good effect with the things like the spirulina anyway. And good news, though, at least for me in Utah water, when you get a CO2 system going, Tetra's red coloration really starts popping. When the pH goes down and so on, they really respond to that, in my experience. Like, Neon's Cardinal Tetras just really,
once he gets
really
that up
brighten
in
up.
His hard Utah water like us, then that should help even more.
Yep. That should help more than the coloration food, because he's already got that going.
Excellent. Okay, so thank you, Tom. I think we have one more today.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Anthony from Oregon. Which we heard from him last week, yes, and he wanted to know how to tell male and female in his
jewel cichlids. Yeah.
Okay. And he says, good day again, Aquarimaxers. Well, thanks to Russ, I have sadly identified my jeweled cichlids. It seems to me that what I have are three females. However, my blue-ish fancy cichlid may just be a male if the forms are correct from what I've seen. So now this raises this week's question. Is it possible for these two breeds to hybridize? If so, they may be very interesting offspring. If not, no worries, for I have permission from the wife to add at least one more, if not two, to the tank. Some of us don't have understanding wives like Kelly.
Well, I'm lucky. What can I say? Fortunate. More than lucky.
Well, I'm pretty lucky, too.
Well, I wouldn't rule out the fact that the possibility of hybridization. It can happen. With cichlids,
it's a little more politically complicated with cichlids.
It is a little bit.
We were just talking about mixing.
Yeah. I mean, with live bears, it's a little easier to contain it in your own tank, right? Because usually some of them end up getting eaten, and the ones that grow up you can keep in that tank, and they don't beat the tar out of each other and so on and so. But with cichlids, it's a little trickier, just because unless you have a really big tank and you're planning on keeping them all in there, which is hard if you're getting 300 cichlids.
Right.
It is a little bit more, as you mentioned, politically, it's a little more complicated.
It's a little bit more frowned upon.
Yeah, but
to mix them.
So, but genetically, in terms of, and behaviorally, it could be possible. I mean, you can't rule it out. There are a lot of cichlids that can hybridize. Flowerhorn cichlids are a multiplicity of hybrids. Malawi cichlids will hybridize like crazy with lots of different species. So, yeah, it could be possible. But I would say, rather than do that, I would go with the other jewel cichlid.
Are they already in the same tank?
I believe they are.
Cichlid?
I believe they are. So I would go, you know, get another jeweled cichlid if you can. It would probably be better to do that.
But if they're already in the same tank, even if he gets another jeweled cichlid, will they still possibly hybridize?
Can't rule it out. Might happen.
So if he doesn't want them to, he needs to move them out of the tank.
Maybe. I mean, some just won't. And it's hard to say. I'm going from the standpoint that nature will find a way. You know, it's I can't rule out the possibility.
Dolphins and the whales wouldn't interbreed either, and now they have a wolfin.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And they didn't think that the wolfin would breed, and now they have a whatever they call it when it's a
wawa wolfin.
I don't know what they call it now.
That's true. The one at Sea Life Park in Hawaii.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm just saying you can't rule it out completely, and it may not happen, but it could. So
here we go.
Better prepare for it, I guess. Better to be prepared that it might happen.
Thank you for writing in again, Anthony.
Yeah.
And is there anything else we need to go over before we're done?
Just if you'd like to contribute and help us get that field recorder.
We're almost
please
there.
Please do. We are so close. We'd be so excited.
Which is really, get there and get done. Really exciting.
Basically, did we mention that we almost have enough money to get the actual field recorder itself, and just we need to get the power supply in.
Yeah.
We'll be set.
But see, the cool thing if we do, well, aside from the fact that this whole microphone.
Will we actually be able to use two microphones again?
Fixed. We can go out and interview people, and the Living Planet Aquarium here in Salt Lake is moving into new, big, spacious, fabulous headquarters.
In December.
And they'll be opening soon. And we could go interview them.
They were receptive to the idea of an interview when you talked to them, weren't they? So
we could take some little videos and put that up for it, too.
Yeah, it'd be very cool.
It'd be really neat. So that would be a good Aquarmex Christmas present.
Yeah.
Okay, and in the meantime,
may the fish
be with you.
Oh, you know what?
Oh, wait. It's not time for the fish to be with
it
them
is,
yet?
It is, but, you know, Tom put, Beatus est pisciculus.
Did I miss that?
I guess.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tom. You even put
that
Latin in for us.
Blessed be the little fish.
That's so cool. He did. There it is right there.
Or blessed is the little fish, not be. It would be fiat if it were is. I mean, if it would, blessed be would be Beatus fiat. But Beatus est is blessed is the little fish.
Well, that's lovely.
Yeah.
I like that.
It is. I do too. Okay. I think maybe it was Tom who showed us that. Did he send us the little picture of that? It's the James Christensen picture.
I don't think it was. I saw the little picture.
Oh, I'm sure we showed it to you. It's the guy looking at the little fish
James
and the floating fish in front of him, and it says that under there.
Because I love James Christensen stuff, and I would remember that if you showed it to me.
I thought I had showed it to you.
You should show it to me. We should put it up on the Facebook page.
It looks really cool. Anyway, and that's the motto that's on in the painting.
That's pretty cool.
I like it.
Okay. Now you can have the fish with you.
Beatus est pisciculus.
That too.